Welcome to Central Coast Voices, a program sponsored by Action for Healthy Communities in collaboration with KCBX and made possible through underwriting by Joan Gellert Sargent. I'm your host, Chris Kington Barker. Heart disease and stroke are the number one killers of women. That's right, the number one killers of women, causing one in three deaths each year, more than all cancers combined. That's approximately one woman every minute. Heart disease in women requires more attention, more research, and swifter action. But it doesn't affect all women alike, and the warning signs for women aren't the same as in men. There is hope. 80% of cardiac and stroke events can be prevented with education and action. Being informed about the risks, knowing the red flags, and having a personal health story is a start. My guests today for our show are going to be talking about some of that and a lot more. They are Jocelyn Jarrett Skelton with Moms with Heart Participant, Parents of Pediatric Heart Disease Survivors, and winner of the Miss United States Women of Achievement Pageant and a local businesswoman. Right, yes. Pretty impressive there, yeah.
Thank you.
And Emily Renault, who is a business development director for San Luis Obispo County American Heart Association and oversees the San Luis Obispo Wear Red Luncheon, Heart Walk, and the Paso Robles Wear Red Luncheon. And then joining us by phone today is Joe Pescatella, best-selling author who transformed his life from a coronary bypass in his early 30s to becoming an advocate of healthy living and has been living that since his surgery. Today's show is live, and you're invited to join our conversation today with your comments and questions. You can do that by calling us at 781-3875. And I want to thank all three of you for joining.
Thank you for having us.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Nice to be here.
Well, Joe, I think I'd really like to start here with you. If you could talk a little bit about your story beginning with your coronary bypass at the age of 32. Were you aware prior to the surgery that you had heart disease?
Well, no, I wasn't aware at all. And you know, you're in your early 30s, so you have other priorities. Family, your job, planning a vacation, all of those kinds of things. And I noticed that when I was playing tennis, that I would get a little pulling sensation in the middle of my chest. And I disregarded it, and I really played every single day for about a month. And at the end of the month, it had turned from a little pulling sensation into kind of a pain. And I went to see my physician, where I had been 4 months earlier for an annual physical. It had been perfect. I just kind of walked in this front door and announced to his staff, I have bronchitis, and take a look at my lungs. And they did, and they didn't find anything. And so he said to me, as long as you're here, why don't we do an EKG, an electrocardiogram? And I said, sure. I had one done 4 months ago that was perfect. Well, if we did the electrocardiogram, and I'll never forget his words to me. He said, gee, something's wrong with my machine. I'm getting a bad reading.
Wow.
So let's do it again. And I did. And he said, Joe, there's nothing wrong with my machine. There's something wrong with you. You have heart disease. And I think you need to see a cardiologist immediately. And, in fact, I will drive you to the cardiologist because I don't want you behind the wheel of a car.
Wow.
And that was on a Tuesday, and on Thursday I had bypass surgery for a 95% blockage of the left main coronary artery. My kids were 6 and 4. I had not been married to my wife for 10 years at that point, and we just simply did not know what happened. And the prognosis was not very good. I actually had one physician say to me, you know, you're so young and this disease is so aggressive in you, we doubt you'll live to be 40. That don't plan on seeing your children graduate from high school. And so that was the kind of the message that I went home with, and I mulled it over with my wife. We were both stressed out of our minds. And we finally concluded that you can't change the cards that you were dealt, but you can change the way that you play them. So we got very serious about diet and exercise and staying away from secondhand smoke, because neither one of us were smokers, and having a positive attitude and managing stress. And today I am 38 and a half years post-bypass surgery.
Wow.
There are some thoughts that I might be the longest living survivor of that surgery in the country, and I did not change my parents. What I did was change my way of life.
Now, did you have a familial history of heart disease?
Yeah, of high cholesterol. We didn't have many people in the family that, I guess they all had heart disease, but they didn't necessarily die, certainly prematurely. Mm-hmm. But high cholesterol ran in my family. But, you know, those were the days when they didn't know what to do about it. There were no statin drugs.
Right.
You know, if you asked 10 physicians about cholesterol in 1977, which was when I had the surgery, you'd have gotten 10 slightly different answers.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I had a genetic leaning, but and my cholesterol ran high in annual physicals, but nobody was very concerned in those days. Today, of course, it's a different story.
Right. And so when you're talking about deciding to make lifestyle changes, what was your lifestyle like at 32 before your changes?
I ate the typical American diet, so that meant, you know, too many animal foods and too many high fat. But that was, these were the days of the advice, nutritional advice was eat a lot of red meat, drink a lot of whole milk for strong bones and healthy teeth. That was a mantra that, you know, that you learned in elementary school.
Mm-hmm. That whole food pyramid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was physically active in high school. I played two sports in high school and college. But in those days, you know, you'd come out of college and you stop. Certainly no one was talking about aerobic exercise. I was not a smoker, but I had two parents that smoked, and I grew up in Connecticut, so I was subject to secondary smoke. Mm-hmm. I certainly don't blame them. They didn't know at that time. And I was under stress. I owned my own business, and everybody in the U.S. is under stress, and so I just thought it was a natural occurrence. And it wasn't until they all came together into that, the need for bypass surgery, that I figured out that that was a lifestyle that was ripe for disaster, and it almost was for me.
So when you were looking for support of, okay, I need to make some changes, where did you go to get that information, or was that part of your journey of creating kind of that path?
Well, both, because, you know, these were the days when if you were a heart patient, you did not go out and exercise. They put you to bed.
Mm-hmm.
And I can remember,
I
did a lot of research. I traveled the country. I spoke to people that, physicians and nutritionists and exercise physiologists that were experts. I mean, you know, my kids were 6 and 4. I had to figure out something to do. And I remember that I became convinced that exercise was going to work for me. And I went out and bought those original Nike waffle shoes, you know, the blue one with the yellow swoosh. And my doctor said, I forbid you to exercise. You know, you're a heart patient. And I said, well, you know, last time I looked, it was my heart. So I think I am going to exercise. I'll be careful about it, but I am going to exercise. Well, after 6 months, the results of that exercise were so good. One evening, I was home and got a telephone call. It was my doctor, and he said, now, where did you get those shoes? And he started jogging.
Oh, that's too
so,
funny.
Yeah. I had to put a lot of work into it. It took really about 4 or 5 years. And then in 1982, I wrote what was then the first book in this country on diet and cholesterol, a book called Don't Eat Your Heart Out, which ultimately sold in the millions of copies because people were looking for sound advice about what to eat as cholesterol mania started to sweep the country.
Yeah. Yeah, and you do not come across like a zealot.
I'm not. I'm very middle of the road. I mean, I disagreed forever with the extremely low-fat folks, the ones that said, oh, you got to have a completely fat-free diet.
Right.
And I certainly disagreed with the other end of it, which was kind of the the Atkins type of diet, where it was so heavy on high fat. They called it, you know, low carb, but it was really a high fat diet. And I positioned myself right in the middle. And it turns out that all these years I've been eating the Mediterranean diet. I wasn't wise enough to know that's what it was called. In all of my books, starting from 1982 on, we have recommended a Mediterranean-style diet that was moderate in fat, and that when you chose to eat a fat, you ate a healthy one. Mm-hmm. So it was olive oil instead of butter, that kind of thing.
Right. And you've written now 13, is it 13 best-selling books?
Yes, yeah. 13 books. I'm proud that they're used in about 5,500 hospitals in cardiac rehabilitation and in wellness programs. Yeah. And because they're, you know, it's really kind of practical. I'm not a medical professional, so I'm not doing, you know, independent research on what's the best diet. I have to go by folks like the Heart Association that does their studies, and then I know that's a credible source. Mm-hmm. And my whole business of writing and speaking is to give a practical application to that science.
Well, you're also that practicality, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's nice to have a 4-inch thick study on cholesterol, but what does that mean to you? Mm-hmm. When Chris goes one-on-one with the refrigerator,
right?
You
know,
I'm much more about the practical, and I think the message that we try to drive home is that lifestyle counts. That what you eat, whether or not you exercise, if you smoke, what your outlook on life is, how you handle your stress, those things are really important. I had the editor-in-chief of the American Journal of Cardiology tell me one time, for every one person that has heart disease because of bad genes, 499 have it because of knives and forks. So, you know, we need to recognize that, and particularly in the U.S.
With that, your newest book is Prevent, Halt, and Reverse Heart Disease. So the question that comes to me is, can heart disease be reversed when it's genetic and not behaviorally induced?
Sure, it can, and I'm an example of it.
Yeah,
I've been through testing about 15 or 16 years after I went through the bypass surgery. Mm-hmm. We went through testing to take another look at the arteries, and what we found was that the plaque, the blockages, the size of those blockages, had been reduced. So I actually had less heart disease 15 years after the surgery than I had at the time of the surgery. So the reversal is possible. I think, however, that what people that have heart disease, and there are a lot of them in this country, and at least half of them are women, what we need to be concerned with is stabilization. If you're a heart patient and you never got any worse than you are today, you've hit a home run.
Yeah.
You know?
It's an interesting perspective, but yes.
Yeah. It's kind of sexy to talk about reversal.
Yeah.
But that happens in very few people. But stabilization, I think, is really a much more attractive goal.
Right. So that there's not a progressive nature to it. And what you mm-hmm. were talking about when you got your swoosh Nikes, you know, in 1977, there really wasn't cardiac rehabs, right?
No, I looked around here and they didn't have the program. They had it in, you know, some places it was kind of starting up, experimental in nature, but they didn't have it in the Seattle area where mm-hmm. I lived. Mm-hmm. So that's why I have such a strong commitment today to cardiac rehabilitation programs, because I know how much value they can be to somebody that's just had bypass or a stent or a heart attack or you've mm-hmm. just been diagnosed with high cholesterol, because you get good instruction and support. And I was really in the dark except for the research that I had to perform myself. And
right.
It took a lot longer than it needed to.
Well, and gyms used to be very reluctant to take heart patients on as clients. They used to want mm-hmm. a certificate from your physician saying that they were given permission
right.
to have you join
right.
the membership. Well,
it's totally different now. I mean, we're much more proactive in terms of managing the disease if the person has it. And my big interest is in terms of preventing the disease. The ironic thing is, if I had done for prevention what I had done in rehabilitation, there'd have been no need for rehabilitation because I could have avoided that situation.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what we try to preach at the Heart Association. And we kind of, I mean, what you're saying is exactly what we group into our Life Simple 7 is just, you know, to take care of yourself. The 7 is manage blood pressure, control cholesterol, reduce blood sugar, get active, eat better, lose weight, and like you said, stop smoking.
Mm-hmm. Those are all really key.
And
things.
It seems
and they all,
simple,
you know,
too.
And while many of them have a genetic component, for most of the people in this country that have high blood pressure, for example, it's really a dietary lack of exercise kind of a problem, particularly with type 2, which is tied to weight, so that a genetic leaning toward anything is not predestination. That you can overcome that genetic leaning with good lifestyle habits. And then all of the 7 that you just talked about, you know, go into the positive category.
If you just joined us and you're listening right now to Central Coast Voices here on KCBX, your public radio station, our topic of discussion today is heart disease and stroke. And we're going to be talking specifically about women, or really focusing on women. It's a health concern that is less widely known than others in public focus these recent years, such as breast cancer. Yet heart disease and stroke is the number one killer of women, causing 1 in 3 deaths a year. My guest today, and who you were just listening to, was Joe Pescatella, who's a best-selling author who transformed his life from coronary bypass in his early 30s to becoming an advocate of healthy living, and an author of 13 books that are frequently used in the education of patients for better living. Emily Renaud is the Business Development Director for San Luis Obispo County American Heart Association. And also joining us is Jocelyn Skelton, Moms with Hearts participant for Parents of Pediatric Disease Survivors. And Jocelyn, I'm going to jump over to you right now. I'm assuming, because of what I just read, that you're a parent who has had relationship with heart disease through your child.
Correct. While I was pregnant with Charlie, we found out that she had what was called hypoplastic left heart syndrome, meaning that she was missing the left side of her heart. So, we immediately were immersed into this culture and this, heart life that we had no idea how serious it really was. And it is the number one killer of infants and children are congenital heart defects. And it also is the same. It kills more children than all childhood cancers combined. So when you get devastating news like this and you're trying to figure out, you know, where you're going to go and what you're going to do, you do start looking at yourself as well and your own health. I know that, Charlie has had 7 procedures, 2 open heart surgeries, and she is doing fabulous and is a very happy 18-month-old little girl.
I was going to say, how old?
18 months.
She's had 7 surgeries.
Yeah.
Wow.
So lots of catheterization procedures where we were just testing pressures in her lungs and in her heart function and making sure that we kept a lot of areas in her heart that had so much surgical damage done when it comes to tissue buildup and scar tissue and stuff. We have to make sure we always keep that open. So, she's beautiful and she's a ray of sunshine in our lives. And she's really taken our family on a ride that, they say that your life falls apart sometimes, but I really think it fell into place when it came to our family, and we have a new drive and a new passion. So, yeah, heart health is definitely probably our number one priority right now.
If you're wanting to ask any questions or make any comments today about our topic, please call us at 781-3875. I forgot to remind you of that. It's 781-3875. And with Charlie, what's Charlie's prognosis now? Is she going to continue to experience these surgeries? Has that kind of abated now?
No, you know, medical advances have changed so much just in the last 30 years. Mm-hmm. Had I have been born, I'm 33 years old, had I have been born with hypoplastic left heart, there was nothing they could have done for me, so I would have passed. So knowing children that are above their, early 20s, we don't even really know many that are in their late 30s. In fact, there are a couple out there and we call them unicorns because, you know, you hear of them, but you've never really seen them. It really is us trying to figure out, what is the longevity of their life going to look like, which means that heart health has to be something that is very important to our family. And it's something that all of us do together in order to, you know, help Charlie with that longevity of life. There will be another open heart surgery in about a year and a half when she's 3 months old or 3 years old. It's all about redirecting the right side to do both oxygenate and pump. Mm-hmm. Out, you know, pump out oxygenated blood out to the body. And at some point, her heart will wake up and say, I'm not supposed to be doing this. What's going on? When that happens, we don't know. And when that does happen, that's a bridge that we'll just cross and get through. Mm-hmm. And so adulthood, we don't know right now for our kids. That's why research and, bringing awareness to what our children are going through is something that's really important to me because, research could truly be the key to my daughter's future.
And you had mentioned before we came on the air that, you're looking at your own heart health mm-hmm. now as a result of weight gain that you experienced during
Correct.
Charlie's illness and the stress.
Oh, yeah. Stress alone, just going through that. Most of her, her first heart surgery was at 7 days old, and her second one was at 5 months old, and we had about 5 procedures in between all that. So we were in and out of the hospital when it came to children at Children's Hospital Los Angeles. So that was definitely something that was, really took a toll on our health as a family. My husband gained a lot of weight. I gained a lot of weight. We were sitting bedside and eating crappy cafeteria food right. and, not getting any exercise. And we came home about, last year about this time and both kind of looked at each other and were like, this is not good. This is getting bad. So I've kind of started my own road to recovery and my own road to heart health. And I have been able to lose about 40 pounds and continuing to work hard. And my husband's jumping on the bandwagon. And we just want our children to see that it's not an individual. It's a group effort. I think it needs to be something that every family does together. It's really important. And I think as mothers, we really end up forgetting about how important our health is. And we'll put things on the side because the kids need this, or, I've got to make dinner, or, we've got school and we've got dance. And before you know it, you're 40, 50 years old, and you never took care of your heart when you should have. And now you're having serious problems. And so it's definitely something that we have as a family rallied around Charlie and rallied around our own health and said it's about time we start getting heart healthy together.
And the Emily, what was cited by Joe and by Jocelyn, just kind of are astounding statistics. 1 in 3 women mm-hmm. who die are dying as a result of stroke or heart disease. Mm-hmm. And the highest percentage of child deaths are from
exactly
yeah congenital heart defects yeah
cardiac.
That was one reason the Go Red for Women movement was established, to really, call on the medical field. Let them know that there are signs that are different in women that they need to take care of. And it used to be, even 10 years ago, that women would go to the doctor and they'd say, oh, you're just stressed or whatever.
Anxiety.
Anxiety. Mm-hmm. Maybe give them a Valium or whatever the drug of choice 10 years ago was. And and, you know, send him home when really it was heart disease. So, I mean, to think that it's a killer more than all cancers combined is astounding.
Yes, mm-hmm. It is astounding. Mm-hmm. So let's talk a little bit about when you talk about symptoms are different and the effects of heart disease are different in women. Let's talk a little bit about what that looks like.
And I have to preface this by saying I'm not a medical professional either. However, the best tool to go to is our Go. Let me get this correct. It's goredforwomen.org. And there's tools, and it will describe the symptoms. But basically, a lot of times it will manifest itself as your jaw will hurt, or you just feel totally fatigued. It's not, as I understand, it's, and again, not being a medical professional, it's not the typical squeezing in your chest as men mm-hmm. will.
It can
experience.
Even show up as almost flu-like symptoms as well.
Right. Mm-hmm.
It's very interesting how it's so different, and some of the symptoms you wouldn't even think would be associated with your heart.
Well, with women who are having wellness checks now, is this something that the medical community is beginning to look at, really taking seriously for women that they need to be evaluated for heart disease as well as men?
Yeah, it's come a long way in the last 10 years. And, I mean, of course, I want to pat the Heart Association on the back a little bit for that, because I do think it's a lot of the research and education and just the awareness and our volunteer advocates that have been out there, too, spreading the word. That's one thing with the luncheons that we have in pretty almost every county in California. There's probably a heart Go Red for Women luncheon, and it's purely education to mm-hmm. get the word out to women. So I mean, it's like anything. You need to be your own advocate yourself when you go into the doctor. So if the doctor thinks that it's not what you think it is, I mean, just fight for it.
Yeah.
Really,
and it's better to be safe than sorry. I mean, I'd rather hear I don't have anything than find out, you know, when it's too late, that there was something very serious going
the
on.
The statistics that are cited, and any of you can answer this, are those just for the United States? The 1 in 3, is that in this country? Is that a national statistic?
That is a national statistic. I'm not sure if that carries on worldwide. Joe, do you have?
It's a U.S. statistic, and it's an improvement from where we are, but we, particularly with women, we lose more women to heart disease than the next 7 causes of death combined, and we're now about over 50% of the heart attack deaths are in women. So we've really kind of crossed the line. It's turned out this is an equal opportunity killer, and it's not just men. But you know, and the word is getting out. But I can tell you from doing many, many lectures in the course of a year, I still have women in the audience come up to me and say, "I'm taking notes for my husband."
Right.
Huh. I don't have to worry about this.
Huh.
And we need to continue pressing on, and that's why these Go Red for Women luncheons are so important, because it's a tremendous opportunity to educate a large number of people all at one time on what their what their risk is.
Do you see, because you've worked a lot, you also have interfaced, Joe, with the medical community for over 30 years now. Do you find that the general approach of the medical community about the acceptance of heart disease being a real significant concern for women has grown? That's really being embraced?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, a lot of physicians were trained on the male model because
right.
that's all we had.
Mm-hmm.
And so everything revolved around how did this work in men. And so you had, you know, what we call the Hollywood heart attack, you know, the pressure
right.
in the chest and
right.
the guy falls over. Mm-hmm. And so it's only been more recently that there's been an appreciation for the number of women that have heart disease and what the signs and symptoms are and how it can be treated. And but that has changed. I mean, I think every competent physician today is looking at the heart health of their female patients just as much as they look at it in their male patients.
And I think one thing to really talk about, too, is heart disease isn't biased. I mean, it doesn't matter if you're what your ethnicity is. It doesn't really matter. Sometimes even the size that you are. That was one of the things I learned about was skinny fat people, which I thought was hilarious. I wish I was one of those people if I had to be a heavy person.
Explain skinny fat people.
Oh, people who have very high in fat but are very very thin. And so they're called the skinny fat people. And I said, well, why didn't I get that gene? No. That is one thing to really look at, too, is that, you know, there isn't a type. Heart disease can truly affect anybody. And that's what's even, you know, scary all in itself.
If you are listening to Central Coast Voices on KCBX, your public radio, 90.1 San Luis Obispo, 91.7 Salinas to Paso Robles, 95.1 Lompoc, 90.9 Santa Ynez, 89.5 Santa Barbara, and worldwide on the web at kcbx.org. If you just joined us, my guests today are Joe Pescatella, author who has transformed his life from coronary bypass in his early 30s to becoming an advocate of healthy living. Emily Renault, Business Development Director for San Luis Obispo County, and Jocelyn Jarrett Skelton, who's Moms with Heart, a participant for parents of pediatric heart disease survivors. This is a great time to call in and ask questions or make a comment about today's topic, and you can do that by calling us at 781-3875 and joining the conversation. Again, that's 781-3875. So with regard to looking out for our heart and health, at what point should we start?
Right away.
Yeah.
When you're born.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, and Jocelyn's point about having the family be healthy together is a great one, because it's so – I was fortunate that my parents were kind of ahead of the time, and we were kind of a health food Berkeley-type family. Mm-hmm. And I've noticed now, you know, I'm – a little over 50, it's so easy for me to stay in shape because I'm used to those foods.
Yeah.
Because I grew up with them. And sugar-sweetened beverages don't even appeal to me because it's not something that my palate even...
But see, and then I'm the guilty mother who is the one who's like, I don't have time to cook. Here's a chicken nugget.
Yeah.
You know, here, drink this like horrible juice box that's full of sugar and who knows what else. And so I think that's something too, is as a mother and as a family, is to really sit down and say, you know, what are our kids actually eating? What's going in their bodies? Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until I really started like reading the ingredients. I mean, my feeling is on that is if I can't pronounce it and I don't know what it is, why am I putting it in my kid? And so I know that's one thing, you know, it's something that's become, you know, we go for family walks now. And even though I'm still guilty of giving them a chicken nugget and doing stuff from time to time, you know, we really are trying to change that, because processed food and things that are high in sugar are just so hard on our bodies. Yes. and our, you know, our brains and our hearts and everything. So I've seen a huge difference in my children since we've started cutting that out.
Joe, yeah, for you
needs,
with your children
to
too.
Start early.
Have you changed your children as well? How old are they? They're in their 30s now, right?
They're even older than that.
Oh, okay.
I have grandchildren ranging from 6 to 11. And so we're now changing their habits because we've already done it with our kids. And my two children grew up you know, in a household that was very heart health conscious. So they picked up on that and they have passed that on to their own children. I think that I'm going to be speaking at the Go Red Luncheon in Santa Maria. And the subject that I want to be dealing, that I'm going to be dealing with in the talk, because everybody has heard about healthy eating, and everybody has heard about effective exercise. And
right.
The question I have is, why, if we know so much about the relationship of those things to heart health, so few people practice it. I mean, this, you know, this is a country that has become very literate in terms of healthy lifestyles. We know the difference between an apple and a piece of apple pie. We know the difference between going out dancing and watching Dancing with the Stars, you know, but when it comes to actually eating healthy and exercising regularly, we by and large do not do it, which is a big reason why we're leaders in the obesity rates in the world. We have 6% of the world's population and 33% of the world's body fat in the U.S. It's a reason why type 2 diabetes is now the scourge that it is. It's the reason that we've got 70 or 80 million people with high blood pressure. And so the research that we've done and in a lot of the writing I've done really attributes a great portion of it to stress, which is what I think Jocelyn was talking about. Because when you are under stress, when you're by that child's bed in the hospital and you're under stress, you know better, but M&Ms are lunch.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And when you're under stress, you don't go to the gym. Mm-hmm. And when you're under stress, you light up cigarettes. Mm-hmm. So the subject matter that I want to deal with is the impact of chronic stress as we experience it in life in the United States, and the impact of that stress on our on lifestyle habits that have something to do with the health of our heart. Because I think we really spend a lot of time and effort educating people on what's the best way to eat, what are the best ways to exercise, and I think most people in this country really understand it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the next round of questions should be, why are we not putting that information to work?
Well, and I think I'm sorry, Joe.
No, go ahead.
But I also think as a society, we've done our children such an injustice when it comes to the fact that it's so much easier for them to put a dollar in a machine and get a Coke out than it is necessarily to put a dollar in the machine and get, maybe a sports drink instead. So as a society, it's one of those things that, you know, we've got to start changing the future of our kids and changing the healthy lifestyle and the healthy attitude that our children should be having. You know, I mean, you go into the supermarket and it's cheaper to buy corn chips than it is to buy corn. You know, and that's the kind of stuff that, you know, truly needs to be looked at and truly needs to be changed in order to, you know, for the longevity of our children's lives and their hearts.
Well, I think they're only going to change it when there's enough of a groundswell that causes them to reevaluate whether or not it's worthwhile having that high sugar ingredient. Mm-hmm. I mean, we are rapidly moving toward the point of no trans fats in processed foods. And that did not come about because the processed food guy said, let's just be good people and take the trans fats out.
Yeah, right.
And talk, Joe, can you...
There's really been a groundswell of people saying, hey, this stuff is poisoning us. And you know, we've got to get it out of the foods, and legislators have heard that.
And when you're talking about trans fats, Joe, for people that may not understand what that is, can you kind of give some examples?
Yeah, it's when you take what otherwise is a healthy oil, let's say a polyunsaturated oil like corn oil, and you harden it into a product like stick margarine or a muffin or a chip. The hardening process is called hydrogenation, and one of the byproducts of that is called trans fat. Trans fat is about the worst thing you can eat in terms of raising the cholesterol level of your blood. It's even worse than the saturated fat you would find in red meat or whole milk dairy. So the once that evidence became known, and studies were done, and people started to understand that, you know, this this bran muffin might be bran, but it's not. The muffin is not benign. It's held together with trans fats. They're going into my body. They're causing my cholesterol level to go up. Once that was understood clearly, then pressure was exerted on Congress to tell the food manufacturers to get rid of the trans fats, and that's exactly what's happening.
Go ahead. I was going to say we have resources on heart.org where it'll show you how to read labels for that very reason, because I think that's what it's intimidating. But I kind of started adopting into my lifestyle. Every year I choose something that is, okay, so sodium, I'm going to check out sodium and how much sodium is in each product. And, I mean, again, it does go back to what Joe's saying, though. I mean, whole foods, and both of you were saying this, is whole foods are really where it's at if you can cut out as many processed foods as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, fruits, mm-hmm. vegetables, and lean meats.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Yeah. But it's hard. Again, you know, and we'll get a chance to explore it at the Go Red program that I'm going to be doing. But so much of it, you know, comes down to chronic stress. That I just read a study the other day that said that 70% of American families do not know what they're going to have for dinner at 5 o'clock
right.
that afternoon.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So mm-hmm. if you don't know that, you know, and you combine it with the chronic stress of your work day and picking up kids and everything else, then you know you're going to end up with fast food or something that comes out of a box or a can or a package.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, it's all kind of intertwined together, but certainly understanding what's in those foods by reading the labels is one of the first things you can do.
When we talk about cholesterol, because you've mentioned cholesterol and you said that really was in your background and your family what the trigger point was for your heart disease, can you talk a little bit about the good, bad cholesterol? Because that's, I think that kind of throws people off too.
Yeah. Well, first off, it's not the cholesterol that's in the food that is as important as the cholesterol that's in your body. So remember, we used to say, don't eat eggs too high in cholesterol,
yeah.
don't eat shrimp. Today, we've found that the cholesterol that's found in foods doesn't have the same impact on raising your blood cholesterol as some of the saturated fats or the trans fats. So there are two basic types. One is called LDL, low-density lipoprotein cholesterol. That is what sticks to the artery walls, causes blockages, and it impedes the blood flow to the heart. If it impedes it enough, then people get chest pain, angina, when they go upstairs, for example. If it occludes it, you know, completely blocks it, and no blood gets to the heart, you have a heart attack. So what can you do to lower your LDL cholesterol naturally? Well, you certainly can talk to your doctor, you know, about statin drugs, but you also, from a standpoint of lifestyle, you can strip out the foods that have the trans fats, and we just talked about, mm-hmm. you know, stick margarine, cracker, and really reduce the foods that have saturated fats. So those are animal foods and whole milk, dairy. The good cholesterol is called HDL, high-density lipoprotein. And this is kind of a scavenger cholesterol, and it runs through the blood vessel system, picks up the bad cholesterol, the LDL, and causes you to excrete it. So you want a high level of HDL. The single best thing you can do to improve your HDL is a regular program of exercise. So those are the two types. I do not pay too much attention, frankly, to the total cholesterol number,
mm-hmm.
because what you'd really need to know is how much of that number is good and how much is bad. You can have two people they each have a cholesterol of 200, but the guy on my left has, and I'm making this up for effect, has his 200 is 50 LDL and 150 HDL. He's got no problem.
Right. Mm.
The guy on my right has a total of 200, but 150 of it's LDL and 50 of it's HDL.
He's
got more
a problem.
Of a problem.
Gotcha.
See what
yeah.
I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So when you get that test, which, you know, I think should be part of an annual physical, that's what you want to speak to your physician about, is where am I in each one? Because each one is a separate risk factor. that's the way it works.
And, you know, you mentioned, and I really want to reiterate this, that before you had your surgery, and you were very close to heart attack before you had your surgery, you did not have high blood pressure, right?
Right.
And you didn't have, so your cholesterol was high, was it?
Yeah, my cholesterol was high, was around 240 to 250.
But at that time, they were doing total cholesterol.
Yeah, well, in those days, they didn't break it out.
Right.
So, you know, that's all they had to work with was the total. And although it was recognized on, you know, charts that this was high,
right,
nobody really knew, you know, where high should be starting and what that really meant in terms of translating into risk. For me, it translated into a high risk.
Mm-hmm.
But as I say, nobody knew. Today, where you've got the breakdown of HDL, LDL, you know what your triglycerides are, there's so much more that comes out of blood tests. You really have a profile that gives you a much more accurate view of what your risk is. But even if you didn't have any of those things, it just makes so much sense to eat well, exercise regularly, not smoke, manage your stress, and have a positive attitude.
And I want to come back. I'm going to do a real quick break here, but I want to come back and I want to talk about the concept of stress, because I think people's assessment about what stress is may vary too. I'm Chris Kington Barker with you for Central Coast Voices on KCBX FM, the Central Coast Public Radio from Salinas to Ventura and around the world. We're available on www.kcbx.org. If you're just joining us and you want to hear today's entire show, you can log on to the KCBX website. And using the drop-down menu, after clicking on Central Coast Voices, can access this about 24 hours after the show is completed today. The voices you're listening with me today are Joe Pescatella, an author who will also be speaking at one of the Go Red events that's taking place in Santa Maria, and we're going to be talking more about that. Emily Renault, who's with the San Luis Obispo County American Heart Association, and Jocelyn Skelton, who is a mom with Hearts participant and a parent of a child with pediatric heart disease. We have about 15 minutes left in today's program and may have a call time for one or two calls if you want to call us quickly at 781-3875. So talking about stress, you know, it used to be people would say, no, you don't want to get stressed. And it would be the concept seem to be you don't want to have a situation where things upset you.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, is that really the full picture of stress?
Well, stress is kind of anything that causes your body to change. It's the reaction to an event or to a word. And in this country, I think most of the stress is created by the fact that everybody seems to be out of time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I talked to a woman the other day who's an engineer at the Boeing company, and she said, you know, I'm answering emails at 9 o'clock at night. I'm doing my laundry at midnight. I'm in a grocery store at 6 a.m., dropping kids to school at 7 a.m., 8 o'clock. I punch into Boeing and write down the 20 things I must do that day to have a successful day. And, of course, they never get done, so you go through the same exercise the next day, except you have holdovers, which ultimately get taken care of on the weekend. So it's that kind of stress that is showing itself to be an independent cardiac risk factor, and particularly for women, because, you know, for men, it's kind of a plumbing problem, and that is that those big arteries to the heart, like the left main coronary artery, get plugged up by cholesterol blockages. But in women, what we're finding is that at the bottom of the heart, there are a lot of very tiny blood vessels. And when women get under stress, sometimes those blood vessels constrict and seal off, and no blood gets to the heart. It's got nothing to do with the with cholesterol, but it has, you know, everything to do with stress, and that's coronary artery spasm, and that can lead to a heart attack. Mm-hmm. So not only does stress keep us out of the gym and, you know, keep us munching peanut candies,
right,
but it can also have a much more direct impact on the heart health of women.
Yeah, stress really does, you know, cause your body to release hormones and chemicals that truly make you think that you're hungry when you're really not hungry. And it starts, you know, doing things with changing your makeup of your body to where now it's starting to store fat. So it really is, you know, stress is awful, and it is something that really needs to be taken care of and handled.
Joe, have you? How do you deal with stress? What have you learned as some key ways that have been helpful for you?
Yeah, the thing to understand is that there's no such thing as stress reduction. It's an oxymoron. It doesn't exist. Stress management
yes.
exists,
mm-hmm.
and so that means you can be preemptive in terms of actions that are taken. And for me, the single best stress manager is my program of regular exercise. I do about a 5-mile walk. I used to run, now I walk 6 days a week and work with a trainer 2 days a week. And I can tell you that that combination really has helped me to manage my stress. You can feel that the stress hormones are being burned up as you are exercising, and so that's good. I think there are things like yoga, Pilates, Tai Chi, anything to do with deep breathing is really helpful.
Mm-hmm.
And then people need to learn to disconnect, to get off of it for, you know, 15 minutes a day. Get off of all of your screens. Don't answer your telephone. Close the door to your room or your office and just, you know, be inside your brain for a 15-minute disconnect, and it's amazing what that will do for you. If you're a person that knows how and likes to meditate, and not many in the U.S. are,
mm-hmm.
Because we're such a, you know, we're so short on time while we're meditating, we're thinking of all the things we could be doing if we weren't wasting all this time meditating. But just to be able to disconnect for a little bit is wonderful. But for me, I'd have to say the principal way that I manage my stress is through exercise. So as a typical type A, I'm doing two things at the same time. I'm strengthening my heart and I'm managing my stress.
Well, and exercise is a good way to shut everything off, too, I think, although I have been mm-hmm. at the gym and see people still on their phone.
Mm-hmm.
But,
mm-hmm.
you know, I take Pilates myself, so I'm glad that you put that on your list. But you take a Pilates or a yoga class, you are really frowned upon if you have your phone in that class. So there's a good hour that you're
yeah.
tuned out, mm-hmm.
You know, so it's so interesting that we keep running out of time and yet we keep creating ways to do things faster,
right.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So what some of the common misperceptions about women and heart disease and about this topic, we've already talked about one, which is heart attacks and strokes or health issues for men. Wrong, right?
Right.
Yeah.
What are some others?
I think that when I touched on before that, you know, it's not unbiased. I mean, it can be anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's one of the things that a lot of people, you know, think about, oh, but I'm 30 and I'm skinny and I'm this or I'm that, or, you know, or my parents never had it. You know, a lot of those things come into their play and, oh, it wouldn't ever happen
mm-hmm.
to me.
Athletes are shocked when
yeah.
they...
And I think that's just it.
Yeah.
I know Joe was talking about, you know, cholesterol levels and that, and, you know, and that he had a high cholesterol level, but you can be a pretty, you know, very healthy person and even have a heart attack and not know. You know, I look at my dad. He was about 60 years old, could run marathons around me. In fact, he did. And I would try so hard to keep up with him when we would be running and stuff. And, you know, he wasn't feeling right the night before, went into the doctor, and sure enough, he had three arteries clogged that were 99% to 100% blocked. So wow. The fact that he was even still alive, the doctor said the only reason why you are is because you are so healthy. So I think a lot of people don't realize that, you know, it really is, can be very much of a silent killer, because the signs aren't necessarily there that you would think might be there. It's real interesting.
I think one of the things that stood out for me too, in reading through the material for today's show, we've had so much emphasis on women being aware of breast cancer. Exactly. There's been so much focus on that. And the fact that this is as common as it is really needs to be expanded as an awareness. We as women need to take this seriously.
I've had women say to me, I'm a woman, I get to circumvent heart disease. And I think it's important to point out that women do not circumvent heart disease, but they postpone it. It happens 10 years
later
than men because of female hormones protection. But particularly when you hit menopause and you lose the hormones, you lose the protection, and then heart disease jumps on American women in a much more virulent strain than on men.
Talk about, we've got just a few minutes, so talk about the upcoming events that, for instance, what Joe's speaking at and what people can participate in.
Absolutely. So Joe is going to be speaking at our Santa Maria Wear Red Day Luncheon, which is on February the 5th at the Santa Maria Country Club. There's still seats available. The luncheon here in San Luis Obispo is actually sold out. It's also going to be happening on February the 5th. But it does happen the first Friday of February every year. So look for that next year. Then also in Ventura, since I know you're far-reaching, they also have a luncheon that's on February the 5th. So that is our official National Wear Red Day.
Okay.
Then we also, in this county, Paso Robles, if you weren't able to get tickets to the Santa Maria luncheon or the San Luis luncheon, then Paso Robles is going to be celebrating a luncheon that Jocelyn is going to be speaking at on April the 8th.
Okay. I want to thank my guests today, author Joe Pescatella, Emily Renault with the San Luis Obispo County American Heart Association, and Jocelyn Jarrett Skelton, Moms with Heart participant for Parents of Pediatric Heart Disease Survivors. Central Coast Voices is sponsored by Action for Healthy Communities and the San Luis Obispo Community Foundation in collaboration with KCBX, and made possible through underwriting by Joan Gellert Sargent. Please join your host, Fred Monroe, next week, and his guests, Henry Hernandez from the Resource Capitalists Group, Joshua Eldman with Tech-Tecurity, and Jeff Buckingham with Norcast Telecom Networks, as they discuss the evolution of the premier software and technology association on the Central Coast, serving tech businesses, geeks, makers, and entrepreneurs. I'm Chris Kington Barker. I want to thank you for joining me, and thank you, Joe, Emily, and Jocelyn, for being
You're
my
welcome.
Guests today.
Thank you.